We are back with episode 495 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and not that I am thinking this, but in case anybody else is listening, yes, it was all my fault.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and I have nothing.
And this is Bronstam from Australia, but if I sound like Gary from Jacksonville, there's been this whole trouble. It's a long story.
Yeah, a very long story. Very drawn out. Yeah, we are going to be continuing with our catch-up from what was left over last week and the content from this week as far as our episodic discussions go. And we also have a few new news items that we want to discuss. But before we do any of that, Edmund, I think there's something you do usually, sing, you know, show tunes or maybe give a disclaimer or one of those.
Yes, no, well, I'll save the Sondheim version for the season finale. But all I will do for now is warn everybody that we might discuss anything and everything that's happened in the news or in the episode, so you will be spoiled. But we always try and leave you a little bit of time to catch up before we do that to you.
That's right. And as some of you may remember from our previous episode, Google is doing its usual messing with our stuff. I think it's because maybe the NSA is listening a little bit more closely. I'm not sure. Maybe it's Samaritan. It's one of these things going on. So every once in a while, we may have a few hiccups, but we're going to try and push through. That being said, one of the other problems that we might be having is possibly related to the zombie apocalypse. As our first news item here may suggest, the sci-fi show Z Nation has actually gotten renewed for a second season.
Are you kidding me?
I am not.
Nope.
Oh, jeez.
There's not a lot of information in this particular article. All it says is that it's been renewed. It's set to air in 2015, but I can't understand this because I couldn't get past the first episode.
Oh, no, I'm still watching it. Just sort of it's like that train wreck B-movie type of thing, but I honestly never, ever expected it to get to a second season. Holy moly.
No. Certainly, I didn't either. But this next news item is a bit better. Gary, why don't you go ahead and lead off here with this one?
Okay. Let's see. The sci-fi competition series Face Off returns for an eighth season, January 13th. I like that sci-fi does programming like this as opposed to wrestling. You know, we don't get story out of it per se, but we really, you know, you get to see some of the imagination that goes into, you know, making a variety of different characters and aliens and demons and things like that. And I still have to say that I am honestly surprised about the way they pull off effects sometimes. In this age of digital technology, it's nice to see that, you know, makeup and prosthetics and stuff like that is still, you know, so well used.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I like watching with my family because the kids get a real kick out of it. With my daughter definitely being more and more into genre stuff, and she is more on the animation side, but she definitely appreciates the artistry that goes into it. And my son just thinks it looks cool. But it's one of those kinds of competition shows where the competition side of it is more, while they are competing against each other, it's emphasized more that they're competing with what they've done up to that point. And I like that style of how they do things. They also had something like Jim Henson's Creature Shop or something like that, or a show.
Yeah,
like
no,
that.
You're right. Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, Jim Henson's. Yeah, I think that's what it was, Creature Shop, and it was, I guess, kind of in the vein, not necessarily people's makeup, but as well as like puppetry and other kinds of animated creatures.
We enjoyed that one too.
I don't think they did that renew. I didn't think it did.
I don't think so.
I think the fact that Henson died kind of got in the way of that. Was it Brian Henson that passed, or was it John, the other son?
I think it was Brian, but that was still before that actually came out.
I think they had filmed it before.
Oh, okay.
Because he was on the show for the finale. Yeah. So, but at any rate, I don't know what they're planning to do with that. I'm kind of hoping it comes back because it was such a nice show. And these are the kinds of shows that I would rather be on there than the, you know, a millionth iteration of paranormal stuff that they seem to still trot out.
And not only that, but, you know, as you get into these, and I have to roughly group this as a competition show, and there's a bunch of different, whether it be cooking, design, or, you know, a variety of different things. I have to say, I actually, on this one, I sort of feel like they actually treat the people with a lot more respect than than some of the other shows treat their contestants or the people competing. So it's nice. There's a certain respect level that I don't think some of the other ones have.
Yeah, I would say that's fair. Bronstone, why don't you take the next one, as it's of interest, and kind of plays into what I was talking about last show.
I've got to be honest, my audio cut out for a little bit there. Are we talking about the Supernatural one?
Yes.
Okie dokie, good. Actually, have it up. So Supernatural, some of the producers and showrunners and whatnot have talked about how, despite, how shall we put it,
the abject failure
royally at their previous attempt of setting up a spinoff, they're not opposed to doing it again, but this time what they'd rather do is spend multiple episodes essentially setting up the ensemble and the concept and whatnot. At this point, they don't seem to be talking about having another go at the Bloodlines concept. It would be something new, and they don't necessarily have an idea. And Jeremy Carver and Bob Singer and Eric Kripke have all been talking about how CW have been really, really, really good about the idea, and that they don't really want to start on something unless they've got a good idea for it first. I kind of wonder where that thought process was with doing Bloodlines, but there you go.
Yeah, we might want to put this one under the lessons learned category. let's develop the idea first and get some idea of how well it's going in execution before we just kind of put all of our eggs in the basket and figure out that it's a complete and utter failure. What didn't help Bloodlines by any means is the fact that Arrow, a show with much less years behind it than Supernatural, basically managed to set up its own spinoff in such spectacular fashion compared to what Supernatural attempted to do, that it just made Bloodlines look that much worse in comparison.
Oh, I suspect this is part of the major reason why they're going with this thing. They're not talking about we want to have another shot at it, but they want to ape what Arrow did, which was, you know, bringing in Barry Allen for a couple of episodes, introducing his character, some of the stuff that would be ongoing with him and whatnot, and making you really like Barry Allen, and then shifting to the spinoff where this guy becomes a protagonist with his own set of superpowers. Right. I mean, the whole thing was that the two episodes where he's not the Flash were that good that they decided we don't have to do a backdoor pilot. We can just go straight to, you know, we can do a regular pilot. We're that confident in it.
Mm. Yeah, I would still like to see a spinoff here, although a part of me is also thinking that the inconsistencies of Supernatural in recent seasons may actually speak against the idea of diluting the talent pool as far as Supernatural goes, but we'll see. I think actually what they need to do is they want to make this a future franchise with a future, what they need to do then is effectively kind of set up the new order now rather than wait until the show comes to an actual close for whatever reason, and then try and figure it out. They don't want to go the X-Files route where they try to reboot the show with a new kind of generation or new mythos and kind of pass the batons as poorly as X-Files did it, which, you know, they had their chance and they kind of blew it. But anyway, we'll see how it goes. Edmund, if you could take the next and final news article for this show.
Absolutely. For those of us who actually remember John Carter, which should have been John Carter of Mars, but that was just part of the problem, wasn't it? When that crashed and burned out of the Disney studios in 2012, the film rights to John Carter have now reverted to the Edgar Rice Burroughs estate, and they are very adamant that they do in fact want to see the classic Mars series brought to the screen, so they are going to attempt to reboot it, we can only hope that it gets done better. Although I actually for me, John Carter is one of those classic cases where the film itself wasn't necessarily all that bad. It was just the way it was handled and marketed was absolutely abysmal.
That was one of the two biggest problems. I also think that the main actor was just a cardboard cutout.
Yeah, yeah.
the one of my housemates was watching it not too long ago, and in the first scene, it's Bryan Cranston is playing the guy whose name I forget, who has like a, you know, 2.5 minutes of screen time, and it just made me think, God, it would have been so awesome if Aaron Paul could have got some time off.
Yes,
just a good actor instead of someone who was just like so, so incredibly bland. Like, I, why did the studio throw so much money at movies with this guy in it? Because John Carter came out like I think a couple of months before or after Battleship, which also starred the same actor whose name I'm forgetting, and it's what surprised me when I not too long ago when I actually got around to finally reading that first John Carter book was that the film is actually fairly faithful. It captures a lot of the tone while ditching some of the less palatable aspects that were very kind of rooted in that time period when it was actually written.
Yes.
It needed a better lead actor, better marketing, and they should have just called it John Carter of Mars.
Yeah, it wasn't as it's. I don't feel like it was as bad as its reputation suggests, by any rate.
No, definitely not.
And so this might be good. Not having the Disney power behind it might actually force them to do something more than make it just spectacle. Which I think was the other side of it, that people felt like that's what they were going to see. Plus, you just throw out John Carter, and no one knows what the hell that's supposed to mean.
Yeah.
Obviously, that comes down to a lot of it. Well, we're going to go ahead then and go into our break, and when we return, we will be back to our episodic discussion, so stay tuned. Okay, well, Gary, I don't think you actually got a chance to really pick a topic last time, so why don't we go ahead and lead off with you. What would you like to discuss first?
Well, let's knock out something what I think will be a small, simple discussion and talk about Star Wars Rebels.
Okay, sounds like a good place to start.
Absolutely. We're talking about Star Wars Rebels, Season 1, Episode 4, Fight or Flight. Ezra and Zeb steal an Imperial vehicle while on a simple errand.
Okay, and what would you give this one?
I would probably give it a 5.
All right, and Bronstum, did you happen to catch up with this one?
Unfortunately, I haven't.
Okay, it's probably good that you didn't. I would give it a 6. It was... Gary, would you say that this was kind of just plot by numbers? Star Wars by numbers?
I was going with the word juvenile.
Yeah, that's not bad either. It just felt so rote. I mean, anybody could have written this. Honestly, there was nothing special about it at all.
No, and really, we got no character development. It was almost like a slapstick routine is really what it came out with, and it sort of is disappointing me because as this show was starting, and I guess I shouldn't let it disappoint me because I know, and they told me going in that this was not going to be like a Clone Wars sense of a show where it dealt with broader themes and stuff like that. It was going to be a very much simpler show, and even Dave Filoni, the director of the series, said the same thing. But I keep having my hopes up, and episodes like this keep reminding me that no, you won't ever have it again. it's very kid orientated, and I don't mean that necessarily in a bad way, but where Clone Wars was really had an adult edge to it, even though it was presented as animation. This one is really firmly in the kids, possibly young adult, but I would still relate it back to kids. And if it keeps up, if it keeps like this, I honestly don't think I'll keep watching it. I'll have to see. But what's your thoughts on this, John? I mean, it's a drastic departure from previous Star Wars cartoons.
I don't know that I can say much more other than to say that as opposed to the premiere, which I thought was perfectly fine.
Yeah.
This just felt unnecessarily juvenile, and like I said, it's not even necessarily family friendly fare. This is you know when you go to one of those movies where it's animated and it's at least a good balance, like a How to Train Your Dragon type of movie where everybody goes and there's something for everyone, and
yes,
then you've got this, which is so blatantly written for a certain age group that anyone above that age group is just going to be bored to tears. And that's pretty much where I was with this one. I lost interest in it 5 minutes in, and I think that was me giving it more time than it deserved before I became bored with it. It just, I could see where it was going the entire way, and it wasn't giving me even what the premiere was giving me, which was at least an entertaining episode. I'm not expecting the Clone Wars. We know that. We knew that going in, so I can kind of check my expectations there. But I am expecting a certain degree of quality, and this one didn't bring it.
The story was dumb.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't mean that when I'm referring to it being a bit more juvenile in its aspects. I meant even for a kid show, it was dumb.
Yeah.
So I was very disappointed.
It's an episode that doesn't need a whole lot of discussion because it simply dropped the ball dramatically.
But for those listening, they stole a TIE fighter, they rescued some people, and my one little tidbit of it was something that I really liked. It was my third Star Wars piece I ever had. It was like this troop container where you'd drop the character, the action figures in the side of it, and they actually did use this in this episode. Well, it was an old toy from Kenner, so I was like, I had that toy, so that was a nice little nod, but I'm sure only old people know it.
Yeah,
who aren't watching the show.
Really reaching for this one, that's all I'll say. All right, well, Bronstone, we've circled back now to you, and no, it was your choice next, sorry. I forgot, you were the one who picked Person of Interest last time. So what would your next topic of choice be?
I think we should try and, since it's banking up a bit, knock through some Haven.
Okay. And let's go ahead. There's three episodes here that we want to discuss. Let's talk about the first one, and here's the promo.
Believe what you want about my mission, but the Troubles? They're incredibly entertaining.
She deserves worse than death.
Audrey is still in there.
I'm gonna slit your throats. Tell me that wasn't genius.
Haven. All new this Thursday at 8, part of Sci-Fi's 31 Days of Halloween.
All right, and if you could do the recap, please.
Alrighty then. Haven, Season 5, Episode 4, Much Ado About Mara. Dwight, who's now leading the guard, and Nathan are conflicted over what to do about Mara. Dwight wants her to end the troubles at any cost, but Nathan is convinced that Audrey is still in there somewhere.
Alright, and what would you give this one?
I give this one about a 7.
Alright, and Gary?
I will give it a 6.5. I really hated the gibberish.
All right. I'd probably give it a 7 as well. So it's a pretty average episode here. Not as dreadful as perhaps the one previously, but... all right, before I turn it over to you guys, once again, and this is only going to be emphasized by the next two episodes in a big way, I feel like they're still in this mode where they're taking the amount of material that could easily be captured in one episode and stretching it out in two. Almost like they took their 13-episode plan, and when they got 26 episodes, just stretched it out completely rather than add new content, because this just feels like the pacing is so slow. Okay. And the previous episode felt like it could have been done in one act. This was the rest of that episode, and it is still, the pacing is so slow. And so that's it's dragging my interest of in the show down, because I feel like they're not getting anywhere, that they're taking their time way too much. What do you think? Like, Gary, go, jump in on this one in particular. I think you came in the lowest out of the three of us, though. There's not a whole lot of difference, but...
Well, this continue on dragging of what to do with Mara, it was interesting, earlier on, she was the prime motivator for everything that's happening. Now they basically pretty much, have her under lock and key, and they're sort of dictating terms. But what happened to that Mara from, two or three episodes ago, where she was, kicking butt with everybody, and everybody was afraid of her? Now they're just sort of like, oh, she's dangerous, we have to watch out. But that's not how we were introduced to the character. They were trying to, kill her or throw her through an interdimensional portal as soon as possible, because we have to get her out away from Haven and out of here. And now we get this whole Audrey subplot that might be coming back, and why, people like, Dwight, the actual sheriff, who's trying to protect people, can't do something with her because, Nathan's got all starry eyes for her. It's a little ridiculous in my opinion. Plus, honestly, I don't like the devaluing of Mara as an antagonist. I liked having her, this strong, aggressive type of villain. So often are the troubles are almost accidental or passive in nature. It's nice to have such a ruthless foe introduced to shake things up. And now we've lost that. And as I said, it feels like a loss to me. There's no development, just a negative.
What would you add to that, Bronson?
Not sure how much there is to add. It's just, this felt like complete stories are being split up into individual episodes without much thought or work going into making them stand alone. Mm. Not stand alone. They don't necessarily have to be stand alone in the sense like you don't have to watch any of the stuff before or after, but more in the thing of an episode needs to be a complete episode. It's got to have its own beginning and middle and end. It's got to, rise. It's got to have some kind of conclusion. Even if it is going to lead into what happens next, individual episodes have their own, they need to be their own, I don't know, I'm having a bad job explaining this, but I do agree that even if I'm not necessarily disliking the story as much as you do, it's the presentation is really iffy. It's very, it's very stuttery. It's very, broken up. And that detracts a lot.
Well, I'll just say that for me, what makes this feel, what's really emphasizing this and makes it feel like they're just not parsing things out very well, is that this is the second time in a row where the nature of a trouble is spread over the course of two episodes. First, it's the person has these inexplicable beams of light coming out of her torso for no apparent reason, and no rhyme and reason around why it's working the way that it works. And then in this episode, it's the exact same person, but the trouble is now kind of not mutated, but kind of shifted so that now she's emanating microwaves. But it's essentially the same trouble. It's just a little bit of a twist on it. Same thing as what happened in the first two episodes with the, Duke basically expressing his grief or denial. And this is, creating people with their mouths and eyes sewed up and stuff. And now we're going to talk about it soon, but then we literally get into another duology of episodes, which is essentially the same trouble being dealt with over the course of two episodes.
Yeah, again, stretched out just as you said.
Yes, exactly. So we might as well just go ahead and jump into the next one. Let's go ahead and run that promo.
But if Audrey really is gone, we're taking her on a case. What's going on here?
They switched bodies.
I feel like I could punch through ceilings with these things.
If one of the switched people dies, so does the other switched person.
We'll have another dance.
Whatever you do, don't unchain her.
Haven, all new this Thursday at 8. Part of Sci-Fi's 31 Days of Halloween.
All right, and Bronstam, if you will.
Alrighty then. Haven, Season 5, Episode 5, The Old Switcheroo, Part 1. Vince and Dave journey to North Carolina to investigate the mysteries of Dave's past, but their probing unearths a body-swapping trouble that affects everyone back in Haven.
Hmm.
And we want to just roll this into with Part 2 as well, or...?
Yeah, you know what, we might as well.
Okay, and it's followed up by Season 5, Episode 6, The Old Switcheroo, Part 2. As Mara capitalizes on the fallout from the latest trouble to strike Haven, Nathan and Duke are forced to take a desperate and dangerous gamble to get Audrey back before she's lost forever.
Okay, so we're still going to score these separately. Bronstam, if you could kind of give your score for each one.
I give the first one a 6 and the second one a 7.
All right, and Gary?
I'll agree with 6 on the first one, but the second one I'm going to give an 8.
All right. I'm probably going to go with a 6.5 for the first one and 7.5 for the second one. So it all kind of evens out, really. Although that means that the second of those episodes is the highest scored episode of the season. So maybe somehow a sign of things improving. I'm not even going to try and pretend that's the case. All right, so... We're roughly halfway through what is this segment of the season, right? Because even if it's 26 total episodes, it's 13 episodes, then a hiatus, and then the other 13 episodes. So it's essentially, this is halfway through. We're approaching the midpoint here, which drives me nuts because, again, this felt like it was one episode's worth of story stretched over a two-parter. Gary. Again, what are your thoughts on this two-parter? I mean, you gave it essentially an average rating overall, but the first part you felt was much weaker than the second.
Well, I mean, in some sense, as you're saying, you know, this is really one episode, and I agree that they're, you know, pulling these things, you know, like taffy and stretching them out, I guess, to make the episode count, which is a shame. But that being said, the first episode's, you know, a lot of setup, and you don't really get much. You know, there's some highlights. I enjoy the Dwight and Gloria switch. That started to be a little bit of fun in the first part of this first part. Also, I'm a little curious. You know, we get this thing that, you know, Nathan's, you know, sensed the real Audrey, or, you know, feels she's in there. Then, you know, then Duke starts mentioning that, oh no, that's really Mara just faking it. And I'm like, so how does Duke know and Nathan not, yet they're still convinced she's in there? So it was starting to get a little confusing in my head for that. But as we get to the second episode, things really picked up for me. I felt like we got several different conclusions. We got the body swapping was resolved. We got Audrey back, I think, maybe, in a way that I never expected from – I didn't quite understand how it happened, but, you know, from Duke trying to give a trouble to Mara.
I was going to say that, like you said, it's in a way that you're not quite sure you understand. That's because it's completely and utterly out of nowhere.
Okay, good. It's not just me then.
It made no sense at all.
Was I dozing off? Did I miss some line of dialogue somewhere? But yeah, so, but yet, and we've seen Duke try this before without anything happening. He's tried to give her a trouble, and it was something effective. Ha ha ha. It doesn't work on me. So now to have all of a sudden have her expel a second body out of her when he does it is a little confusing to me.
See, here's my problem is that, okay, they've just set up this thing of like, okay, so now Mara and Audrey are apparently in different bodies. How does no one immediately suggest or at least discuss the possibility, okay, what if Duke just shivs Mara right now?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how is that not the first thing anyone thinks of? Like, I'm not saying they necessarily have to do it straight away, like, but just...
Doesn't this resolve the entire...
About what... Sorry?
No, exactly. This resolves exactly the whole conflict over the first four episodes, or at least the previous two, before the two... Okay, whatever. But the whole thing of Dwight wanting to kill Mara, the guard wanting to kill Mara, Nathan being the one guy convincing everybody, no, Audrey is still in there. Great, Audrey's not in there anymore. Kill her. I mean, it's the only thing that was keeping anyone from killing Morrow was that Audrey was in there.
I haven't watched the next episode yet, but they really better address that off the bat.
Not either. I'll be fair to say that I don't know if that's going to be something that they immediately address or not, but it just seems like something that
the writers are contriving plots that allow them to keep characters and actors in particular situations that they like, even though it doesn't necessarily make sense.
Yeah, it's almost like they don't want to let go playing through some scenario, even though...
Yeah, in order to do that, they really have to write nonsensical stories.
It's really unfortunate.
That's the downfall.
This show was on such a roll and was constantly kind of introducing more and more ideas to explain what was happening. And it feels like, I don't know if there was some kind of change up in the writing staff or just they lost their way, or like I keep speculating, they decided that they would just stretch things out a little bit more so that they could play in their sandbox a bit longer, and that was just something that they couldn't handle particularly well. Whatever the reason is, Haven right now is a bit off the rails, and they really need to get back. This is starting to fall into, I hate to say it, it's starting to fall into the Warehouse 13 problem, which was once they got enough room to maneuver, where they didn't feel like they had to bang out their best 13 episodes possible for a season, and they just had a lot more room to breathe, it felt like they lost the message.
I think Russell T. Davies had that problem a lot.
Yeah.
Doctor. Now that you say it like that, I'm sort of thinking back. It's like, hey, that's exactly what happened. It's like the more freedom that the show or the writer gets, the more that they sort of start doing things that are a bit off kilter, and you kind of realize that, okay, they needed they needed someone with perhaps, you know, a bit of a firm hand on the reins to say, okay, easy does it. Like, let's bring it back a bit. Let's focus on what's important.
Yeah.
Well, and one of the things that did raise the second one for me that we haven't discussed yet was, and I hope I get the names right, cause they were switching bodies. So I think I could be confused, but I want to say it was Dave talking about how it's bringing back around to the Colorado Kid again, which I thought was a interesting twist to go back to that, considering we haven't heard it in some time.
No, see that was a plot development I kind of liked.
I did like it. That's why I said
it was, and it was surprising because it did seem like they'd you know, wrapped that storyline, and then to find out like no, it's still important because it is. I mean it's been a undercurrent of the show for a long time, and just the idea that what's going on continues to be important and relevant to this thing. That's smart writing. But then again, that's I imagine that's sort of a plot development that they've had in the back pocket from back in the day when they were a bit more when they had a bit more pressure on them to turn out good stories.
Maybe I'm not so sure. There's a part of me that wonders if they're going to revisit the Colorado Kid and somehow completely mess with what understanding is already there of how that was all supposed to have worked. It was already complicated enough. And I'm a little worried that they're going to throw something in to make it more quote-unquote clever and just botch the whole thing up. A part of me wants to enjoy the fact that they are somehow tying the lost quote-unquote lost colony of Roanoke and the whole Croatoan thing to this. On the other hand, I also feel like that's a somewhat well-worn folklore to introduce, and it seems awfully weird for that to be tied to Haven when it's Maine, and that's not. But anyway.
I suspect more than anything is going to play into the origins of Mara.
It could, yeah. I'm thinking that when they start introducing yellow-eyed demons, it's going to get really weird. But there we are. Yeah, some of you out there definitely.
These different aliases, just, you know, they open up, you know, a new barn and it's Jared Padalecki in a white suit.
Yep, yeah.
Which actually would be kind of awesome. I really like Jared Padalecki in that role.
Once again, there are some people that are going to get that, and they're just going to be giggling with glee. Anyhow, I think that we said about enough when it comes to... Yeah, I agree.
Someone disagrees.
No, I think that's underscoring our agreement there. Thankfully, you got Bailey's attention. Anyway, we're going to go ahead then and move on to a different topic. And Edmund, we're going to let you back in here.
if Bailey lets me.
That's, I think, Gary's dog. But anyway.
Yeah. Let's see. After all that middling discussion, why don't we talk about the latest episode of The Flash?
All right. And let's go ahead and run that promo.
The metahuman we're looking for can transform himself into a poison gas.
And that suit does not make everybody safe. For every person you save, there's going to be somebody you can't.
The Flash, new hit series this Tuesday at 8, 7 central on the CW.
All right, and if you could...
Can I let him out,
Mom? Edmund, if you could.
Yes, this is The Flash, Season 1, Episode 3, Things You Can't Outrun, like the family dog. Barry and the team go after the Mist, who possesses toxic gas powers, and they reflect on the night Caitlin's fiancé died. Meanwhile, Henry gets a long-awaited visit from Joe, and Iris and Eddie continue to keep their romance a secret from Joe.
He might need a bath.
He smells kind of good. Does he? I think that maybe Google is doing some really interesting interference now.
Yes.
But anyway, hi, Gary's family. All right. Edmund, what would you give this one?
I would give this one a
7.5. Okay. And cross them. How about you?
I give this one a 7.
7, okay. And over at VogNetwork.com, our friend Henry gave this one a, what would that be? I guess a 7.5. And, yeah, I'm thinking that I'm right around the same. Gary, you there?
Yes, sir.
Hi. What would you give this episode of The Flash?
This episode of The Flash, we're at, let's see, we're at 1.3. I would give it a 7.5.
Oh, that is remarkably consistent.
Yes.
Across the entire board. So I guess there's not a whole lot that we need to really say about it too much, but maybe some general thoughts, Edmund. You're the one who picked it, so...
Sure. One of the things that amused me was this whole thing of bringing in Robbie Amell to play Caitlin's fiance. So which immediately brought up apparently there is life after the Tomorrow People, and but also then after his supposed death and realizing wait a minute, they brought in Stephen Amell's brother to play the guy who happened to be trapped in the middle of the explosion that created all of these. All of these superpowered people. So,
the particle accelerator explosion.
Gee, do you think he might be coming back, like sort of around the mid season or season finale? But...
I'm sure it would create a firestorm of discussion.
But
yes, indeed.
Yeah, sorry, that had already been revealed in press releases over the summer, so
okay.
It's not a surprise.
As I mentioned, I don't always necessarily follow that stuff. So.
Yes. I think that it was made I think maybe it was more prominent because his brother Steven kind of touted it rather loudly, and one does not simply ignore Stephen Amell on Facebook. So.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, that's a risk.
Yeah. You cannot do that. So, at any rate, it was just... Gary, I mean, you seem to like the beginning of this series. I mean, we're only 3 episodes in, and quite frankly, I feel like this is the first episode that really is the show kind of finding its footing, because there was the pilot, then there was the second episode, which was really the first episode of the series, for all intent purposes, and... to me, this felt like them trying to go from a pilot mode into a series mode and just still not quite getting there.
I know. Yeah, I can see what you're saying. And honestly, I've been skimming Arrow. I can't say I've been watching it regularly, but this episode had that kind of a little bit more feel to it. Maybe it was some of the flashbacks and stuff like that. That seems to be a gimmick of the Arrowverse. I feel like they're still, you know, developing the characters. I feel like I'm having a sense of them better. So it's working for me right now. I like that. I still enjoy that it's it feels like it's playing with more of the superhero toys than Arrow does, and I like that aspect of it as well. So
It does have a little bit more of the superhero, maybe even a lighter touch than Arrow does, which is fine. I don't have a problem with that because I like the fact that these are two segments of the same universe that are telling the story in a slightly different way. And Barry has a very different personality from Oliver, which is a really good idea because it would make no sense whatsoever to try and replicate Arrow with the Flash and have the main character be so similar. I just feel like they're still trying to get their feet under them, really. No pun intended, of course, but it wasn't horrible, but it was very much the way that I felt about a couple of the early episodes of Arrow. They're still trying to find their way.
They took a break from sort of doing, you know, from putting their focus into the ongoing, you know, the current story to develop a bit of the characters, the backstory of things and whatnot. Like, that was really the focus, like continuing to build this this tale of two dads that's going on with Barry, who the Star Labs characters are. And personally, I really appreciate that. I especially between their introduction in Arrow and what we saw in the theater, I've thought that the Star Labs characters just really needed some development. We needed to get a chance to know why we should like them and why we should like them in different ways than just being told that, oh, these guys are helpful and awesome. Like, one of the few things I disliked about that first episode when I first watched it was it seemed like they were trying too hard to get to have a Team Flash right off the bat. Whereas with Arrow, that really had to develop slowly over the course of the show. You know, we get to know Diggle, and then Diggle comes in. We get to know Felicity. Felicity comes in. As we get to know these characters, they become part of the circle. And Flash has just been trying to skip straight to that. And now we're sort of getting into the background of these characters, why we should like them, why they should be part of this team. So I really appreciated that about this episode.
All right. Well, I think that we covered that one pretty well. Let's go ahead then. And Gary, what would your next choice be for a topic?
Well, let's stay in the superhero genre and swing over to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
All right. And here's the promo.
My loyalties are with Hydra.
I'll be the judge of that.
Next Tuesday, rivals clash.
I don't like being threatened.
This isn't a threat.
Covers exposed.
We have a mole, ladies and gentlemen.
And one agent closes in.
Where are you planning to take Sky?
To meet her dad.
On a shocking truth.
Give Sky what she's always wanted. Or else Agent Simmons dies.
New Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Next Tuesday at 9, 8 Central on...
All right, and if you could do the recap, please.
Absolutely. We're talking about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 2, Episode 5, A Hen in the Wolf House. I see what they did there. Anyway, a team faces off against Hydra Security Chief Bobby Morse. Elsewhere, Sky's father seeks a reunion with his daughter.
Okay. And what would you give this one?
I'll give it an 8.
All right, and Bronstone, how about you?
I give this one an 8 as well.
Edmund?
I'll go 8.5.
And that is what I gave it, an 8.5. I gotta say that giving Mockingbird, aka Bobby Morse, an introduction that was visually reminiscent of the best Black Widow scenes from Iron Man 2, good visual choice. Like that a lot.
I'm sure you did.
It makes the point very quickly.
It does, doesn't it? That's my...
Of what kind of... What kind of character this is going to be?
We can't get Black Widow, but we're going to bring you perhaps the next best thing. And the fact that she had her signature batons and was beating the hell out of people with them didn't hurt. So, really enjoyed the introduction of Mockingbird. I think Kyle MacLachlan is the perfect person to play Sky's incredibly creepy and violent father.
Oh, he was so good.
Yeah.
I see, I had issues with him.
Okay. And tell us about them, Gary. Tell us your issues.
Well, here's my problem. You know, I had the sense that he was, you know, when I say powerful, I mean like having power, like manipulative, not like, you know, being able to lift 1,000 pounds or something like that. But, you know, someone to be feared because, you know, but he seems just like, you know, crazy. He doesn't seem like sort of, you know, a plotting, like, geez, like, maybe to use another comic analogy, you know, like a Lex Luthor business type, a guy who's, you know, scheming and planning almost like, I guess, Hydra is to some extent. He's just nuts and can kill people easily. So I was hoping for more of a ominous versus, you know, I guess more of a Lex Luthor than a Joker. And I feel like we got to touch more of the Joker than the smart villain.
See, we've already had, I feel like, a few of those kinds of villains. Like, I mean, Dr. Whitehall, I think, has been playing that brilliantly. I was so happy when I realized that Reed Diamond was going to be one of the main bad guys of this season. And he's just doing that sort of smug snake, you know, smarter than thou kind of shtick and playing it to perfection. So having another villain who's, you know, goes the opposite way seems a lot more twitchy and crazy and homicidal is absolutely the way to go.
Yeah, plus, I think the fact that Whitehall and Skye's father, who hilariously is called the Doctor, it makes sense for them to have a slightly different personality there, and perhaps even a personality complex. I don't know if that is supposed to play into the fact that it's hinted that that Skye's potentially alien ancestry is also partially his ancestry. I don't know. They've come right out now and said that it's alien writing, it's alien everything. So that if they might as well simply put, you know, made you know, by the Kree on the side of the obelisk and get it over with. But I just like the fact that this continues to flesh out the post Winter Soldier world in some really nice ways. And no, they just introduced a couple characters that I really dug. I really have no complaints about that. Let's see, what did I put in my review as? I mean, the only problem that I really have with it is that they are running the risk of Hydra going from being overconfident in their victory over S.H.I.E.L.D. to being somewhat idiotic. I mean, how did Coulson get someone in to be that high up in Hydra to be watching over Simmons? That didn't quite work for me. That if Hydra was so paranoid about Simmons, how did she get in there? Was she always in there? Has she been in there since things went bad? I mean, it hasn't been that long. So, something didn't quite connect for me there.
I didn't really have much of a problem with it. I guess I sort of I just chalked it up to this was something that was probably in motion before Coulson became the director. Like when Coulson sort of got the toolbox and started looking through the files, he's just like, you know, guess what? You've already got an undercover agent in Hydra.
Mm.
Congrats.
It's possible. I mean, that it could have been that she was already there in and pretended to be part of the, you know, the Hydra group, but you know, everyone was kind of shocked about Hydra even still existing back when Winter Soldier happened. So that's where it kind of threw me off a little bit. So in some way, shape, or form, they either will need to explain this or completely pretend that everything is absolutely makes sense and just let it go. So either way would be fine with me. Edmund, anything to add to this episode?
I did really like the both introductions. I mean, certainly, I mean, Kyle MacLachlan has been around, but I really did like the just aside from the fact it's giving, you know, a wonderful actor some really meaty and hammy material to chew on. I'll admit, I mean, that whole sequence was done when Mockingbird reveals herself, which just was so fast. It did paper over the plot hole for me, but I would not be surprised if they didn't come out with some sort of mention of, you know, of even Fury having cottoned on to some of what was going on before that, and planting a few people. Because now that it's been revealed, it also does make a certain amount of sense to why Coulson was willing to put Simmons in that position, even though the evidence to date had been that she was not somebody who would do well in that situation. But I also like the way they were sort of showing her growth with the way she managed to frame her lab mate and get the attention off of her even before she knew she had there was that ace in the hole to get her out of there in the end.
Good point. All right. Anything else to say about this episode, or shall
just
we?
Just that I'm kind of a little disappointed that they've brought Simmons back into the fold this quickly. I liked the idea of, like, you know, taking that character on a different journey and putting her in a different situation for this long, and I kind of wish they'd been able to keep that going. But at the same time, they did a really good job of bringing that story to a close, and I'm looking forward to where they go next.
It's the opposite problem that they had last season, where it felt like it took so long for things to happen because they had to hold back. Now they're maybe erring a little bit on the other end, but it actually works in their favor to do so, I think. Kind of getting the band back together, so to speak. All right, let's go ahead then, and Edmund, why don't you go ahead and pick our final topic?
Okay. I know we've... let's see. Why don't we talk about The Walking Dead, then?
All right. Sounds good. And here's the promo.
Microsoft Surface presents scenes from the next episode of The Walking Dead.
You're hiding something. What have you done?
I'm a sinner. But those sins, I confess them to God.
You understand what's at stake here, right?
Yes, I do. So I need you to stay alert. Never let your guard down.
And if you could do the recap, please.
Absolutely. This is Season 5, Episode 2, Strangers. With supplies running low, Rick leads a mission where the risk might not be worth the reward.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what would you give this one?
I will give this one an 8.
Okay. Gary?
I will give it a 7.
All right. And Bronstom?
I'll give this one an 8.
All right. I gave this one an 8.5, and our reader over at bognetwork.com gave it a 9.5.
Ooh.
Wow.
All right. So let's see, before I kind of give their feedback. Gary, you gave this one a 7, kind of an average rating compared to everything else. What kind of didn't work for you, or why wasn't it kind of up to the usual standard for The Walking Dead?
Well, you know, I guess in a sense it was a placeholder episode. We've come to the end of another arc of this series, and I guess rather than necessarily jump right in, you know, we sort of had this kind of little bit of a pause. At least in my opinion, it was an episode, and it just seemed for the most intents and purposes until the last 5 minutes of the episode, you could have pretty much dropped this into any season. And so it just didn't seem like there was much growth or development for anybody in this episode. And, you know, that's part I didn't like, other than, you know, Rick's starting to seem even more cruel than he used to. But that might just be me. But, yeah, I didn't feel like this moved our characters anywhere.
Yeah, for me, it almost felt like the premiere was so packed with action and didn't have a whole lot of time for character beats that this was kind of the necessary aftermath to play with and to play through. What were your thoughts on this one, Edmund?
I guess for me, I liked the introduction of this new character of the priest and giving us a different potential reaction and approach to the zombie apocalypse and all the little intimations of it seems the reveal is going to be of just how much this guy was a fallen priest in the end did absolutely the opposite of defending his flock so I like the setup of that little mystery and certainly the whole lead up to the kidnapping of Bob and the return of the Terminus survivors, I thought was a pretty well done, if rather telegraphed, the classic thing of, you know, that, yeah, if a couple's getting that cozy on The Walking Dead, then you know something's not going to go right for them, but that was still a pretty shocking development at the end, I thought.
How about you, Bronston? What would you add to that?
Don't know what to add to that. My main thing is that I don't necessarily agree that it's a placeholder episode. I thought it did a really good job of introducing a new character, and it's not about filler. It's about the transition. It's about the characters sort of having to adjust from where they were before to where they are now, in very specific ways, and I think the title is really good because it refers, like, just the idea of how well you know people or not, how, you know, some of these people have been together a while and they don't necessarily know a lot of things about each other, you know, and the Maggie learning about the new girl's sort of role in the governor's plan and her father's death and all that was a great scene. I liked the tension between Rick and Gabriel, I think was the Reverend's name.
Yes, Father Gabriel.
I like that tension. I'm looking forward to seeing how it plays out. I don't think this was a disposable story or a filler story or anything like that. I think it had a really specific role, and it's springboarding us into the next stage of these characters' journeys.
Gary, in particular, I'm kind of intrigued as to maybe. In the premiere, one of the things that I remember us saying and that you pointed out is that Terminus was the introduction or seemingly the departure from the source material in terms of how the cannibals were handled. Because, of course, that's not the way that it happened in the comics. And I remember that you said, you know, that was one of the things that you liked was that they weren't being slavish to the original source material. This episode swings way back in line with the source material, with the introduction of Father Gabriel and that final scene with Bob, while yes, it was a departure from strictly the way that it went down in the comics, was far closer to the way that the cannibals were handled in the source material. So it's almost like Terminus was us getting a background or maybe personalizing the conflict between you know, Team Grimes and the cannibals versus the way that maybe it happened in the comics.
Yeah, now they're not just a random bunch of bad guys who do this horrible thing. Now they're those effers from Terminus.
Yeah,
we hate those guys.
And plus the, you know, Gareth and his people from Terminus now have a reason to specifically target them. So it kind of tightens it up for the show. But I guess Gary, my question for you would be: is that maybe part of what was taking away from this episode was the fact that the novelty was kind of lost because they went back to something that was more familiar?
You know, John, I hadn't actually given it thought at the time. It was just going, I was just going with my gut, but you're laying out a pretty convincing argument for me. And I think you're right. I guess I'm looking for new, or at least reasonably new. And I guess maybe by falling back so much, I didn't care for it as much as I would have liked. It seemed, as I said, you know, like route for me, so maybe that you could very well be right. I don't completely agree, but I think you're definitely on, you know, on the right track that it didn't, I guess, it didn't feel like it was treading new ground for me.
Well, yeah, I guess Bob just wasn't to your taste. We'll have to find something more palatable.
Yeah.
All right, well, we are going to wrap up this show here, and we are going to conclude our week's travels through this fictional quagmire next time.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.